White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball.
Get the fireworks ready.
White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
So welcome into White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight, and we've got you for the next hour here on the show to talk a little White Sox baseball. We'll focus, of course, on some of the players in the Instruct League who are playing some baseball right now. Granted, it's at a much lower key and laid-back level than some of the playoff games we've been watching over the last week or so. This is more for young kids to figure out the game, figure out their own games as well and how they play. That's an interesting conversation in and of itself, but we will indeed chat a little bit about the playoffs and what we've seen here, both on the AL and the NL side. Coming up a little later on in the show, continuing our theme of looking at the White Sox prospects and the Instruct League that's going on right now at Camelback Ranch, we're going to visit with White Sox Director of Player Development, Chris Getz. That'll be right after the 12:30 news. We'll talk with Chris about exactly what are the Instruct Leagues. Yeah, I mean, for a lot of fans who are into the prospects, this isn't something that's completely foreign, but for people who are just, you know, you know the names and you've, you know, checked out MLB Pipeline's top 30 or what have you, the Instruct League might be a little foreign to you. So we'll talk with Chris and get the lowdown on what it is and what kind of players are there. We'll talk about some of the guys that are learning and growing down there in the Instruct Leagues right now. We will also launch part one of what is really two off-season series that we're going to run through the winter. Of course, we'll check in on the playoffs as time goes on, right? I mean, we're not going to completely ignore the high-impact baseball that we've been watching. I think that everybody's been watching over the last week and a half or so. But over the course of this off-season and as the World Series goes away, we'll have free agency to talk about, and we'll have, you know, whatever moves the White Sox end up making or are rumored to make. Of course, we'll cover those here on the show. But there are two off-season series that we're kind of running this year. One is pretty simple and straightforward, but I think interesting in its own right. We're going to take each position group one by one throughout the next handful of weeks and break them down. You know, what's there at the major league level for the White Sox at each position? What's there in the system? We'll take a look at some of the lesser-known prospects and see where they're at. Guys who aren't perhaps in that MLB pipeline top 10, right? And may still indeed factor into next year and the development that we'll see out of the White Sox young kids. So we'll do that, and we'll start with the catchers this afternoon. I figured pitching might be a little bit of a different conversation because we're going to talk with Chris Getz. It might take us an hour, a full hour, to do all the pitching that's stacked in this system down through high A, really. So we'll save that for a later issue. But for today, we'll talk about some of the catchers at the major league level and some of the prospects, too. We'll check in with Chris Getz about guys like Zach Collins, who are down there in the Instruct League. Before we get too far, White Sox fans, you can sign up for SoxFest 2018 right now to receive a Hawk Harrelson talking bobblehead. The exclusive giveaway item is only available through SoxFest hotel packages. So join us January 26th. Through January 28th for a weekend of White Sox baseball that you will not want to miss. Hotel packages are available now at whitesox.com/SoxFest. So that's one series we're going to run in the offseason, taking a look at each and every position and really just kind of scribbling down a depth chart best we can here on the show. The other part of this offseason series that I'd like to run, and we talked about this a little bit last week, but now that we're on our new off-season time here at noon on Sundays, I figure we'll kind of set it up again because I'm not sure when our first one's going to run, but I'd love to hear some feedback from you, White Sox fans. I want to run a couple of oral history shows. I want to tell some stories that you want told here during the off-season because now's the time to do it. Once we get to spring training, I have a feeling things are going to hit the ground running and there's going to be a lot of individual efforts and developments that we're going to talk about with some of these young White Sox players on the roster. So during this offseason, and I'll give you a for example, one that we're going to run in a couple of weeks here, I want stories that, you know, maybe from days of yore. I want stories, maybe some abstract things. one of the stories that I've been absolutely fascinated by, and I told this a little bit on last week's show, so I apologize if this is a little rerun, but I want White Sox fans to contribute to this. I want to hear from you about what you want to hear about. And you can always leave us a message on Twitter, at C1McKnight. That's the Twitter handle. And if you've got an idea, if you've got a story that you want us to tell here on the show, just hit me up on Twitter, leave a note there, and we scroll through it, you know, each week and find out. For instance, here's the one that we're working on. Orlando Hernandez comes in with nobody out and the bases loaded against the Red Sox in 2005. He gets all three outs, gets out of the inning. White Sox go on to win the World Series. You know the rest of the story, but I'm really curious, and we've done a couple interviews already, but I'm really curious about how it came about, why Hernandez was on the roster, how it was that he came in when he came in, perhaps not, you know, earlier. It was the gutsiest relief appearance I've ever seen in my life, and I want to tell the story. I want to hear from White Sox coaches and players and perhaps even El Duque himself about that incident there against the Red Sox at Fenway. So that's one of the stories we're going to tell. Speaking of the Red Sox, and really the Yankees too, the playoffs as it is, I just real quickly here before we hit the break and get into our catching breakdown, it has been a blast to watch some of these postseason games. It's been weird, though, I think, from the White Sox perspective. There's a little bit of, I don't know, hedging emotions, I guess. You know, watching Jose Quintana throw out of the bullpen for the Cubs in an elimination game was kind of a roller coaster. But at the end of the day, all I found myself doing was rooting for Jose Quintana in that moment because of the guy that I know him to be and the pitcher I know him to be, watching him with the White Sox for so many years. So many Yankees, I mean, they don't get through that one-game playoff against the Twins without David Robertson, without Tommy Kahnle. You look at coming back in that series against the Cleveland Indians, a lot of weirdness happened in that series. But Todd Frazier with a huge knock to start that game, an RBI knock in the first inning there. You had that bullpen working again with a couple of White Sox relievers, Kahnle and Robertson, that they absolutely had to have. So, you know, for what it's worth, I hope we're all able to enjoy watching some of those guys make their runs here in this playoff season. I've been able to take some joy from it. Certainly the playoffs themselves have been, you know, a mix of, you know, kind of like they always are, a mix of dominance and a mix of pandemonium, a mix of crazy and a mix of just, you know, that's baseball that's going on. But I am a little bit, I don't want to say disappointed, but shocked, I guess, that it's not Indians-Astros in that ALCS. I think all year long, and we watched both teams as White Sox from, you know, at Guaranteed Rate Field, we saw this happen. Both those teams were stellar. And to see them go against each other would have been a blast. That said, I still think Astros-Yankees will be a fun little series. I don't know about that Cubs-Dodgers thing. You know, certainly the Cubs had to spend a lot to get into the NLCS. And we've seen what's happened this weekend. But boy, I just don't. It'll be a lot of fun to watch, and I hope you're enjoying watching it as well. Sox fans, it's never too early to lock in a 2018 ticket package. Full and partial ticket plans are available. Take advantage of great benefits like discounted pricing and flexible payment plans. For more information, call 312-674-1000 or visit whitesox.com. When we come back, we begin position one of our off-season breakdown. We'll get into the catchers for the White Sox, so stay right here. You've got White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890. So welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. Thanks so much for being with us here on this Sunday afternoon. Before we get too far down the line, got to tell you that if you've ever dreamed of being a White Sox player, now is your chance. Attend the 2018 Chicago White Sox Fantasy Camp at Camelback Ranch Glendale, January 14th through the 20th, and be treated like a pro. For more information or to reserve your roster spot, call 623-302-5078. Or sign up at whitesox.com. The number again, 623-302-5078. Sunday afternoon broadcast here during the offseason, our first at our brand new time. And we're really glad that you can all hang out with us here on a Sunday. A lot of playoff baseball going on. We talked a bit about that in our first segment. But I want to get into, I want to go position by position. We mentioned this in the open. Position by position through the White Sox of 2017. See what was there. See what kind of silver linings and glimmers of hope and real development that we saw throughout the season. Perhaps find out some of the holes that the White Sox had position by position and see in what ways they could shore things up for 2018 and beyond. You know, a lot of this conversation is going to be about the long term, because that's where the White Sox front office, general manager Rick Hahn, Kenny Williams has kind of set things up. They're looking long term. And with so many young prospects who made their debut this season and who may make their debut next season and perhaps in 2019, there's a lot of looking forward to do. But there are a couple of positions where those prospects are a little bit further away than a handful of others. And I think one of those positions, pretty obviously, is the catcher spot. Yeah, Zach Collins was taken first round by the White Sox in the prior draft, two drafts ago now. But there's still a lot of development for Zach to get into. And catchers, almost as a rule, take longer to develop because they've got so much burden defensively. They've got so many things to learn down through the minors. You rarely see, now there are exceptions, you rarely see, though, catchers come up young and be ready defensively to play. That is, without a doubt, a rarity. So let's start with what we had on the major league roster when the White Sox started the season in 2017. Giovanni Soto was added as a non-roster invitee in spring training, and it seemed to make a lot of sense at the time. Indeed, it did. You know, you had a veteran guy, a guy who could put a steady hand on the tiller, a guy who had been there before to work with a veteran staff at the beginning of the season, and one that became and was probably always going to become a little bit greener later on in the year. Soto, though, had the elbow issue and didn't play much at all in that season. And right off the bat, the White Sox were going to Kevin Smith, a guy who was taken off the 40-man roster earlier on in camp, fighting just to keep his spot. This is a guy who had major league experience last year, certainly still young. But I think the way that both Kevin and Omar Narvaez were able to kind of mold themselves into a lot more solid option than at first they might have looked like when the season started was a pretty impressive thing. And I don't mean just offensively. I think defensively, too. You can look through some of the numbers, whether it's pitch blocking, whether it's some of the pitch framing numbers, game calling, that kind of thing. None of the numbers aren't necessarily in love with Omar or Kevin. But I think you saw, as the season went on, the tough mistakes, the glaring mistakes, start to really dissipate. I think you also saw, definitely as the second half kind of came around, after the All-Star break, as a couple of younger pitchers came up and started helping out Kevin and Omar in getting the ball to the plate a little bit faster, being able to deliver a little bit quicker, keep base runners more in line, you saw Omar and Kevin, both of them, start to throw to the bases a lot better than they did in the first half of the season. First half of the year, one base runner was caught by the White Sox, and it was done by Kevin Smith. Second half of the season, you start to see a couple more runners thrown out, a couple more throws get made, a couple more opportunities had, whether it's at second base or whether it's, you know, just moving the ball around the infield some when that needs to happen. I think you were able to see that run game by opponents shrink a little bit when they played the White Sox, and that was certainly a good thing to see. And a lot of credit goes around for that, of course. It's not, you know, Kevin or Omar necessarily taking the reins and saying, hey, you got to give me time. But yeah, that's a coaching staff that comes together and finds out, all right, how do we get these guys to feel more comfortable back there? How do we get them to feel more confident and more like a weapon back there as opposed to just trying to hold on to any kind of opportunity that a starter may get them? So a lot of credit goes around. And a lot of credit goes to Kevin and Omar, too, for the bats. While neither of them hit for much power at all, both of them ended up shaping themselves into pretty decent average guys and doing it in very different ways. Kevin Smith, from July 1st to the end of the season, we'll take that stretch, you know, that kind of all-starry breakish thing where things, the roster itself kind of started to solidify into what we saw over the last 2 months. From July 1st to the end of the season, Kevin Smith hit .283, had a .320 on-base percentage, and a .403 slugging percentage. It's a great batting average. It's a solid on-base percentage. And like we talked about, not a whole lot of pop. Omar Narváez, from July 1st to the end of the year, 305 with a 407 on-base percentage and a 406 slugging percentage. Again, great on-base. 407 is terrific from a catcher. 305 is 300 batting average is what it is. 406, not a whole lot of slug. But I think with both of these guys, especially since they're right and left-handed, and the platoon splits kind of bear that out too, you're able to shape that bat, that position, that spot in the lineup into something that's, you know, reasonable, that's maybe, you know, on the other side, respectable, heading toward, okay, that's a real spot there. Granted, there are players that you'd like to see in the minor leagues start to take control of their own development some. But I think with Kevin, who used the right side of the field really well last season, there was a stretch where he was taking everything into right field, going the opposite way, feeling really comfortable doing it. With Omar Narváez, kind of the same situation. That guy takes his walks. Really does. And it's impressive because if you look through the whole team, right, and you're looking for your walk leaders, Todd Frazier led the White Sox in walks last season with only 280 at-bats, 335 plate appearances, 48 walks in total. Omar Narváez, 295 at-bats, 38 walks. Obviously, that's an area that the White Sox offensively are looking to get a whole lot better at, to increase their ability to get on base via the free pass, guys who are more controlled swingers. And that's where we get to one of the minor league prospects, Zach Collins. When Zach was drafted out of the University of Miami, a lot of talk about his power from the left side of the plate, but also a lot of conversation about his ability to control the strike zone, his ability to have that great eye at the plate. And while the average wasn't great in high A ball, 223, the on-base remained 365. There's a hitch in Zach's swing. People know about it. He's been working on it. He's down in the Instruct League right now, actually, and we'll talk to Chris Getz, the White Sox Director of Player Development, a little bit about Zach and what the adaptations are that the White Sox are trying to apply to his swing. But Zach has some work offensively to do. To be sure, he's got some defensive work to do. However, what was really fun to watch was Zach's ability to throw down the second base and throw down a lot. Down in high A, where Zach spent the bulk of the minor league season, he threw out 41% of base runners. 45 total caught stealing. 66 were able to make it. That is a terrific percentage. They changed a lot about how Zach was getting up to throw down to second base. He started getting up more closed with that front shoulder pointed toward the bag, towards second. That was able to quicken his delivery some, and the results speak for themselves. The power stayed for Zach at the plate. He hit for a handful of home runs, certainly nothing to sneeze at, 17 at high A. But what's interesting is when he bumped up to double A and got the promotion at the same time as Eloy Jimenez, he was able to hit a little bit better, and he got on base at a pretty good clip as well, and the home runs were still there too. So for Zach Collins, you know, that development curve is an interesting one. Not only are we looking at, you know, the offensive ability and seeing how that plays after a couple of question marks, but seeing that defensive ability steps up some too. He's in the Instruct Leagues with the White Sox for a reason after being in the Arizona Fall League last year. Speaking of the AFL, one more real interesting prospect that in the White Sox system, catcher-wise, that I've found fun. Sebi Zavala was basically Zach Collins' backup or platoon mate, I suppose, for a lot of the 2017 season down in Winston-Salem. Sebi hit in total 21 home runs in his minor league season, 2017. Split time over Kannapolis and Winston-Salem, 13 at low A, 8 at high A. The average was, you know, okay, 282 in total, 259 at low A, 302 at high A. He got a promotion a little bit after Zach Collins did, I suppose. The on-base is good, and the slugging is solid, too. Zavala is out of San Diego State, a round 12 draft pick by the White Sox in 2015, and he's going to the Arizona Fall League this year. We're going to do a show from the Arizona Fall League a little bit later on, first weekend in November. So mark your calendars for that. Sebi will be one of the players we talk to. And as the White Sox figure out what's there behind the plate, at the catching position, in the system, it'd be really interesting to see exactly where Sebi Zavala fits in. Now, before we hit the news, MLB.com at Bat is your number one mobile app for live White Sox baseball. Stay connected with a fully customizable experience. Get White Sox home screen icons and app features, as well as game day, live game video highlights, radio broadcasts, StatCast, news, and more. Download MLB.com at Bat today. So that's it for the catchers. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the guys we mentioned and some of the other prospects in the system and what's going on in the Instruct League down there in Glendale. We'll talk with White Sox Director of Player Development Chris Getz next on WLS AM 890. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We are joined by White Sox Director of Player Development Chris Getz. Hi, Chris. Thanks for taking some time for us.
Hey, Connor. No problem. Good to be here.
So you are down in Arizona for the Instructs, and I assume watching a little fall league ball as well. Do you, as a former player, as a front office guy, I asked Rick Hahn this a little while ago, and his answer was, well, he barely watches. Do you watch playoff baseball? Do you tune in for this stuff, or are you kind of moved on in the way you consume baseball?
Well, for one, you know, we're out in Arizona right now. Instructional league, got the fall league stuff, and being out in Arizona, the time difference, it's a little – makes it a little bit more difficult to tune in some of those games. But I'm following, just I think, more naturally because I'm a baseball fan. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in what's going on. But there's been some really good games and good series. But beyond that, I wouldn't say I'm as invested as some the typical baseball fan, just because of, obviously, my allegiance towards Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, I watched Jose Quintana come out of the bullpen the other night for the Cubs. And I watched Tommy Canley and David Robertson just own against the Indians for a couple innings. And I, a lot of White Sox fans on Twitter, you know, kind of going back and forth, are really kind of just, I don't know, like proud uncle feeling for a lot of those guys. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but I think that's kind of the best way to put it for White Sox fans right now.
Yeah, I mean, when you watch these guys, I mean, these were guys that helped us out. And I say that certainly returning some of these prospects that we're hoping to build towards the future here with. And for them to go help out another organization for right now. I mean, it's good to see these guys go out there and do some things because, you know, when you're going to put together a trade, as I'm sure Rick or Kenny could attest, you're going out there, you're hoping not necessarily people talk about winning deals. You're trying to help out both organizations because the deal makes sense to both sides. So, and you know, I've got to know some of those players being in this position or playing against them as players. They're quality guys. So I have no, you know, it's kind of nice to see him go out there and perform well.
So, Chris, let's talk a little about Instruct League. I have myself covered the Fall League before, so I'm fairly familiar with that. I've never been to Instruct League. Is it, what's the feel of it? And how does a team decide who goes to Instructs, who doesn't go? What kind of assignments get handed out at that level? Is it kind of a backfield spring training kind of feel to it, or is it a little different than that?
It's probably more it's probably more spring training than it is, I guess, Arizona Fall League or a regular season game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the focus here, when you select guys to come out here, it's for different reasons, kind of individual reasons. But it's guys that you newly drafted guys, newly signed guys. You get them out here. For one, you get them in one spot. They can start kind of growing together, getting to know each other. You know, and through, you know, we sit as a staff early on and we kind of do checkpoints throughout the instructional league here. And, you know, you put plans together. Okay, what's our goal here with this guy? What's our goal with this guy? What do we want to accomplish here in the 4 weeks? Put plans together and go out there and you try to execute it. And you execute it through, you know, your work days and also in the games. But the games are more, obviously, you get out there and you can compete. But, okay, you know, if we're going to make this adjustment, how quickly is it working? Is it going to play this way? Is it going to play that way? So it's really fine tuning the skills more than going out there and just playing games to compete to beat the other team.
So the kinds of players that you've got down there right now range from guys who were drafted in last year's draft to, you know, Zach Collins, for instance, and we've talked a little bit, or we're going to talk some more, I think, too, about the catching position in the White Sox system. Zach's obviously a big name. He was in the Arizona Fall League last year, but more of like a taxi squad guy. He played a couple of times and fared pretty well from what I heard and from what he said. I wonder, you know, as you take Zach through two levels last year through the minor leagues, what sorts of conversations are you having here with a young guy? There are so many things a catcher has to do defensively and offensively. Is there a singular focus for Zach in this instruct league?
You know, as a young player and a higher profile guy, or anyone that you take into your system, there's so many little things that need to be fine-tuned to become a major league player. And Zach has a ton of talent. I mean, that's why we drafted where we did. And he's shown that so far, glimpses of kind of what we envision here in terms of the player that he's going to be. Our focus here was more on the offensive side. Mm. We just wanted to take him a step away from, you know, catching every single day and the demands of that, to just focus on making some adjustments at the plate. I mean, he's a strong kid. He's got power. He can hit. And we've been just working on getting him in a good position to be consistent in terms of barrel to the ball, staying through the ball. He already makes good decisions at the plate. We just want him to be a little bit more consistent because that he's got such good raw power. We just want it to become more usable power and just have more consistent at-bats. And he's showed plenty of flashes of that this season at both levels. And this is just part of kind of the development process. But he's had a really productive instructional league, and we want him leaving here feeling good about where he's at. A plan to kind of execute this off season. He's going to be coming back out in Arizona to work on some things, to continue to work on some things. Hopefully having him in a great position coming next year and have a great season.
What are the differences that you saw in Zach when he went from high A to double A this year?
Well, you know, when he went up to high A, or he went up to double A, it was more, okay, let's get him a taste of this league because this is where he's going to be next year. Mm. You know, he had some really good at-bats, hit for some power. It was really just more getting him acclimated to what he's going to be doing next year. I wouldn't say that, you know, there were still some things that we saw in Winston-Salem that were consistent with what we saw in Birmingham. So it was more for 2018. I wouldn't say there was much to compare to there. That was our goal, and that was our intention to begin with. But you know, there are a ton of things that we like about Zach, and we think now, because he had a little bit of a taste last year, he's going to be in a better position to produce next year.
How do you treat the pitchers in Instruct League and in the Arizona Fall League too, but probably to a lesser extent? You know, obviously you want to be careful of innings limits and make sure everybody's healthy. That's, you know, I think first and foremost in an off season. But on the same side, you want Zach or whatever hitter to see as much live and nasty stuff as you can, because that's, you know, how you make developments. What do you guys talk about as far as getting the best out of those pitchers, but also keeping them safe?
The pitching is kind of the challenging thing instructionally, because you have to watch the workload. Some of these guys, it was their first full season or half season. They were drafted or they went through their college seasons or their high school kids. So you really have to be cognizant of how many innings they're throwing, how many pitches they're throwing, how many sliders they're throwing. You know, so we kind of have a plan in place where these guys go out there and they pitch an inning and they pitch two innings, but really we focus on their side days and their bullpens and their pickoff plays and PFP, just things like that. You know, and like I said earlier about even, you know, Zach Collins or any offensive player, the games are secondary. They really are. It's fine tuning little things or deliveries. And then, you know, obviously you mix in some games just to kind of, They're almost checkpoints just to see where you're at. And if it's translating, okay, I don't think that's going to work. Now let's try this. So it's a really unique environment in Instructional League, and I think we've gotten a lot out of it.
So at the Arizona Fall League this year, catcher Sebi Savala makes his first AFL appearance. He worked in most of the low A levels last year, low A and high A. He hit for a boatload of power, especially for a catcher at that level. He's a college guy. He's a, I believe, 12th round draft pick for the White Sox. Tell us a little about Sebi and why he was a pick for you guys into the Arizona Fall League, and what the expectations are for young Zavala.
Yeah, I mean, Sebi he certainly took a big step forward this year, starting in Kannapolis, and next year he'll most likely start in Double A. But like you said, he's got power. He's a strong kid. He came into camp really in good shape and committed to maintaining the weight, because there have been some times in the past where, as the season progressed, his body kind of wore down a little bit, and that's just kind of part of learning how to take on a professional season. But physically, he's strong. The nice thing, too, not only does he have power, but he's willing to hit the ball the other way. Center field is just not pull power. And he's just maturing as a hitter. He's putting together good at-bats. He's already done that a couple times here in the games that he's played in the fall league. And on the defensive side, he's a good receiver. He's got a solid arm. And you put his defensive skills with what he could potentially do on the offensive side, we got another catcher that could help us in Chicago someday.
Chris, appreciate it as always. Great catching up with you. We'll see you soon, perhaps, in Arizona.
All right, Connor. Appreciate it, man.
That's Chris Getz, White Sox Director of Player Development. Stay here. We'll close things up on White Sox Weekly when we come back. WLS AM 890. Welcome back into White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We're wrapping things up here. Our final segment of the afternoon. Just got done talking with Chris Getz, the White Sox Director of Player Development. Good interview with Chris about the Instruct League and about a couple of different players that are there at the Instruct League at Camelback Ranch and in the Arizona Fall League, too. And since this episode of White Sox Weekly has focused mostly on the catching position, as we go position by position here this offseason, taking a look at the White Sox inventory and seeing what kind of talent is on the rise and is, in a lot of cases, already there at the major league level. We talked a bit about Zach Collins and Sebi Zavala, who are in the Instruct League and Arizona Fall League, respectively. Collins was in the AFL last year, as we mentioned with Chris, is a bit of a taxi squad guy, and Zavala was hit for a lot of power last year. Kind of a really surprising, one of the more surprising prospects, I think, for the White Sox last season. Not counting, some of the top-tier dudes. Aloy Jimenez, I think, doing anything that he did is fairly incredible, probably surprising in that it was as good as it was. Michael Kopech, ditto, I suppose. So if you're taking from some of the guys not named Michael or Aloy, I'd definitely pick Sebi Zavala as a guy who really threw a lot of intrigue on his 2017 season. White Sox games are better with a group. I've always said that. Group events are perfect for clients, employees, celebrating, or fundraising. Bring your group for a great experience with specially priced tickets. It's never too early to start planning 2018. For more information, call 312-674-6330. That's 312-674-6330, or visit whitesox.com. So in the interest of wrapping up the rest of our catcher preview episode, or I guess review and preview episode, I think it'd be worth taking a look just at, all right, if perhaps there are other options thrown into the mix for the White Sox once spring training hits in February. If there are, like Giovanni Soto was in this past offseason, a non-roster invitee picked up or a free agent signed or perhaps even a trade made. I think that'd probably be on the outside of the realm of possibility, but it's, who knows? Rick Hahn's been crazy before. He might do it again. He's certainly worked the phones. There are some options out there. I thought we'd talk about some of them. First of all, let's deal with the free agents. I mean, in as much as both Kevin Smith and Omar Narvaez provided from the left and right side, we talked about the platoon work, Omar a lefty, Kevin a righty. Kevin still handles right-handers a little bit better than he does left-handers anyway, so it's not a true platoon split like we mentioned. So here are some options for you. Alex Avila is going to be a free agent after his year with the Cubs. Obviously a guy who's been here with the White Sox before, coming off a terrific offensive season both for Detroit and the Cubs. Defensively, there's some work to be done there, but Alex is a veteran, knows how to handle a pitching staff, and the White Sox certainly enjoyed having him, though he did not enjoy the kind of success that obviously both sides would have wanted in his year here on the South side. AJ Ellis is a free agent. If you wanted to bring in a veteran, no bat, all defense, good game caller, that kind of savvy behind the plate. I find it interesting because as much as we talk about pitch framing and about the defensive metrics that envelop the catching position at this point, you know, maybe there is something to the Crash Davis ethos. You know, maybe there's something to that salty old catcher who is able to teach these young pitchers a thing or two. I'm being totally cliche here, but perhaps there's something to that. And as the White Sox have so many young starters and even more bullpen arms that are come up that will come up into the fold next year, maybe that's something you want to take a look at. Both Omar Narvaez and Kevin Smith are quite young in their experience, right? Omar came up from Double A essentially last year, and Kevin Smith is a minor league guy who just finished his first, technically speaking, full season, though a little bit short because he was called up after Giovanni Soto got hurt, but you get what I'm putting down. He's out there as a possibility, A.J. Ellis. So are, and I think this was kind of would kind of fit a similar mold, Miguel Montero is sitting around looking for a job. Carlos Ruiz will be a free agent, though he will also be 39. Giovanni Soto is a free agent again, and the White Sox took a swing with him this past season. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see a similar situation perhaps develop, a non-roster kind of invitation. And then there are some of the, I don't know, off-the-wall situations. For instance, Matt Wieters, who's still going, or, well, no, I shouldn't say that anymore. He's done with the Nationals. The Nationals are done in the playoffs. An $11 million player option is what the Nationals have on Matt Wieters. I would expect them to exercise it, but if we're doing a whole catcher offseason look around, I feel like I got to mention it. Tyler Flowers, a former White Sox himself, has an option. It's a $4 million club option, a $300,000 buyout for the Braves, though I think they've been fairly happy with him there, and he certainly hit down in Atlanta. Jonathan Lucroy is a free agent, too. He has had a lot of success in Colorado and was a part of that team pushing as hard as they did for a playoff spot late in the season. Jonathan Lucroy will be 32. But, you know, I don't know that kind of fits the mold of what the White Sox are looking to do. What we did have are reports over the weekend from a couple of different places that the Miami Marlins are, as they're coming under new ownership with CEO Derek Jeter and the rest of that ownership group, that they're looking to, and the report is from the Miami Herald, drop $90 million off the payroll. That would be a decrease of $25 million from opening day last season for the Marlins. Now, of course, they've got Giancarlo Stanton signed to a massive bulk of money, and he's deserved every bit of it in this season. But the Marlins do have a young catcher who might be one of the most athletic guys behind the plate at the big league level right now. JT Realmuto is the guy's name, in case you don't watch a whole lot of NL ball. Realmuto has had a terrific season, is pretty well regarded behind the plate, is 26 years old, and you know, I only bring it up because it would be a trade, right? That's obviously what would have to happen. This is pure speculation, but I'm just throwing stuff at the wall because that's what you do at this point in the offseason when you're waiting for playoff games to start or just finishing up watching them. You do this, and it would be very Marlins to start moving around in an effort to, you know, shed salary and, you know, make moves. I mean, we've seen sell-offs before, right? Whether it's Huizenga or Loria, we've seen it happen. And I get the sense that with the new ownership group in Miami, you know, under Derek Jeter, there are, it seems, and so say these reports, some financial marching orders. But I don't think it's going to be the same kind of fire sale that you've seen in years past with the Miami Marlins. I think those days are probably gone, but if a team's looking to sell pieces, if a team's looking to move some things around, you know, there's no sense in not asking. I obviously, and again, can't stress this enough, this would be kind of the most long shot scenario that I could envision the White Sox going in, but figure I'd mention it as it's also a little piece of the baseball news here this weekend. So before we let you go here on White Sox Weekly, got to tell you that you can join Chicago White Sox Charities for the holiday garage sale on Saturday, December 2nd at Guaranteed Rate Field. You can take home a piece of White Sox history, including game-used equipment, jerseys, hats, and much more. Entrance to the garage sale is free. For more information, visit WhiteSoxCharities.org. We will be back next Sunday. Same time, same channel, noon here on WLS AM 890. We are, again, stress this for you, noon on Sundays during the off season. Of course, if you miss a single episode of White Sox Weekly here on the station, you can head over to the website, WLSAM.com/White Sox. All of our shows are podcast there. So all the interviews we've done, for instance, with White Sox Director of Player Development, Chris Getz, today, that's there on the website and downloadable for you as early as tomorrow morning. So check it out. Download the episodes. We'd love you to get involved that way, too. In next week's show, we will continue our positional breakdowns of the White Sox. We'll head from behind the plate, 90 feet to the right. First base is next. Yeah, obviously, Jose Abreu is going to encompass a lot of that conversation. But there are a couple other prospects, too, that we'll get into here on White Sox Weekly. Thanks so much for listening. You can hit us up on Twitter at C1McKnight. You got stories you want told this offseason. That's where you can leave the message, right there on Twitter at C1McKnight. Thanks again. We'll talk to you Sunday. This is White Sox Weekly, WLS AM 890.
You've been listening to White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. Listen every week for White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890, the proud home for White Sox baseball.